This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Gateless Barrier, Case 6. Once, in ancient times, when the world-honored one was at Vulture Peak, he twirled a flower before his assembled disciples. All were silent. Only Mahakasyapa broke into a smile. The world-honored one said, I have the eye treasury of right Dharma, the subtle mind of Nirvana, the true form of no form, and the flawless gate of the teaching. It is not established upon words and phrases. It is a special transmission outside tradition. I now entrust this to Mahakasyapa. Wu Men's comment. Gold-faced Gautama insolently degrades noble people to commoners. He sells dog flesh under the sign of mutton and thinks it's quite commendable. Suppose all the monks had smiled. How would the eye treasury have been transmitted? Or suppose Mahakasyapa had not smiled. How could he have been entrusted with it? If you say the eye treasury can be transmitted, that would be as if the gold-faced old fellow were swindling people in a loud voice at the town gate. If you say the eye treasury cannot be transmitted, then why did the Buddha say he entrusted it to Mahakasyapa? Wu Men's verse. Twirling a flower, the snake shows its tail. Mahakasyapa breaks into a smile. People and divas are confounded. This weekend, we are gathered here in Garrison, New York, on cliffs overlooking the Hudson, to continue what was begun some 2,500 years ago on Vulture Peak, the transmission of the Dharma. And I think that before all else, it's good to remind ourselves that our tradition of transmission began with a smile. So many years afterwards, and so much of the practice that many of us have gone through, we've heard shouts, read of teachers hitting students, practiced under austere, even seemingly militaristic boot camp-like conditions. Yet it all begins with a smile. And I think if we lose track of that smile, if we don't have that smile at the heart of our practice, we're missing something essential about what we're doing here. The world-honored one said, I have the eye treasury of right Dharma. That phrase is in Japanese Shobogenzo, what Dogen entitled his compendium of talks, teachings. It's a very awkward word to translate into English. I prefer translations that say the treasury of the true Dharma eye. And the way I envision that is the sense that right Dharma eye, to see truly of itself is the key to the treasury, unlocks the treasury of wisdom and compassionate action. When we see clearly, everything opens up for us. Treasury, rather than something being hidden away, is immediately available. The subtle mind of Nirvana. Nirvana, we could say, is a state of being without ego, without self. The subtle mind of Nirvana, I believe, means perceiving in the world and others from beyond our usual self-centered point of view. And particularly it means seeing others not simply as their ego, not simply as their self-centeredness, but seeing through to their true Buddha nature, their intrinsic goodness and wholeness. The true form of no form. Our practice consists of forms. And yet we see these forms as intrinsically empty, as having no essential meaning of their own beyond their function of helping us turn the Dharma wheel, of helping us wake up, of helping us to be honest, attentive, and compassionate towards one another. In our Soto tradition, forms are often used as a way of sacramentalizing everyday life, of ritualizing it, so that we give attention to everything that we do throughout the day as if it was holy, whether it's in the Zendo, or the kitchen, or the bathroom. Everything that we do, Dogen tells us to treat as a ritual. But the point of practicing that way is to see that all of life is holy and worth that kind of respect and attention. The form is just the finger pointing to that fact. It's not the forms that are holy. It's not the forms that we're trying to preserve or pass on. They're useful pointers. But we should not lose track of the fact that the forms are there to remind us that it's life itself that is holy, that we're giving our attention and respect to. The flawless gate of the teaching. That is simply Zazen itself. And we see it, see our Zazen, see our sitting as the gate that opens up to us the fact that the whole world is the gate. The whole world is our teacher. The whole world is the Dharma, showing us moment after moment the essential truths of interconnectedness and impermanence. The world teaches you that every minute of every day. Our sitting simply a way that teaches us to pay attention to those teachings of life and not turn away from them. It is not established upon words and phrases. It is a special transmission outside tradition. This first transmission occurs through a presentation and an enactment, an action, and a response to that action. It shows immediacy, not conceptual understanding. The fruit of our practice may include an understanding, but the real fruit of the practice is our smile, our ability to say yes to life as it is, to experience it with love and joy, regardless of its content. I now entrust this to Maha Kasyapa. Entrust is the key word, because its root is trust. And much of Mumon's comments about this make fun of the notion that anything is being given from Buddha to Maha Kasyapa, that there's anything to sell, anything to get, or anything to give. That's where we have all this language of he sells dog flesh under the sign of mutton and thinks it's quite commendable. The smile, the flower, two of the most ordinary things in the world. We're not handing over something secret, something esoteric, something that's our private realization, but we are sharing in something that's completely public, completely available to all. Trust is a very key part of the transmission and what will happen here this weekend. See, it's not that in any way I became identical to Joko Beck, or that Pat is in any way identical to me. Transmission is not cloning. When I started out studying with Joko, people would ask me, well, what would Joko say about such and such? And when I started, I would try to remember what Joko would say and tell them. But after a while, I didn't bother. I just said what I thought. And I trusted that my understanding and her understanding were congruent. Not identical, but in sync. And the trust is not just the teacher trusting the student to carry on a teaching. As if, now here this is, you know, here's the teaching. Make sure you do it just the way I've always done it. I can trust you to do that. Don't mess it up, right? It's not like that. It's the student also trusting themselves to fully embody the Dharma. That you don't have to mimic the teacher or try to do just what your teacher did in order to preserve their Dharma. You fully embody it yourself. And when a teacher and a student each realize that, they smile. Now, an interesting part of this whole transmission process is also represented by the fact that this story of Buddha and Mahakasyapa is almost certainly a myth. It's not included anywhere in the Pali Canon or any of the original Indian sources. Apparently, it first shows up in China about 1000 AD, maybe 1500 years after the events it's supposed to describe. Now, it's possible that something like this occurred and is preserved in oral tradition, but I have a feeling that Ananda would have written it down. There wasn't much he missed, and they certainly wrote an awful lot down, so I think they probably would have gotten this one. So what we have is Chinese Zen Buddhism recreating something about its own origins as a way of defining and maintaining itself. The tradition is not something that we simply inherit and maintain like grandma's silver that we try to keep polished and, you know, keep in the cupboard safe and pass on to generations. We're constantly recreating it for ourselves, taking aspects of what we've inherited, but also discarding aspects and adding new ones. In our lineage, there's been a great deal of both discarding and preservation. Joko inherited a great deal from her teacher, Maizumi Roshi, but at the same time discarded his principal teaching method of koans and developed her own practices. There's much that I do that's like Joko and much that I do that's my own. I'm sure that will continue to be the case for Pat in Philadelphia. All of American Zen is a constant process of reworking what we inherit from Japanese sources. And even within American Zen, we are constantly transforming from one generation to the next how we do things. For instance, I am discontinuing a tradition among American male Zen teachers of giving Dharma transmission to female students that I've slept with.
You're not going to give it?
You know, the weekend isn't over. There's a lot that we inherit that, even though we joke about it, we inherit the trauma of the past as well as the treasures of the past. And to honestly accept transmission is to also accept responsibility for past trauma as well as past treasure. And each of us as teachers have to work with the traumas that we inherit as well as what the good that we inherit. So that's a big part of the responsibility that is also passed on. Tomorrow, transmission ceremonies will take place in two parts, and I want to say something about them in advance. In the morning, we will have a Denkai ceremony, which, in a sense, is an elaborate form of the Jukai, precept ceremony that many of you have received or have seen here. The way I am using that ceremony and the way I understand it is that it's the portion of transmission that gives permission to teach and to give precepts. And in our Soto tradition in America, there is still an ongoing process of sorting out